Rockstar Podcast, episode 34. This episode, we talk about Tony's mornings and Mariano's evenings. We discuss raising your prices, part two, handling a sales pitch, programs we use for proposals and estimates, what we do with requesting deposits, project management and fees, and not breaking yourself over the head as a solopreneur trying to do everything. Hope you enjoy.
Hello, and welcome to Rockstar Podcast, episode 034.
We're live. You don't even give us like a... Okay, yeah. Hey, what's up?
We've had like...
10 minutes.
7 minutes, yes. Mariano, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Oh, good.
Yeah, it's nice and pleasant. Quick to the point.
The 34th episode, Mariano pulled off the greeting.
Easy.
This is Lorenzo at ScreamingLunatic.com along with Tony Tinetto of DropHouse.com and Mariano from Avaliant.com. Yeah. Tony, how are you?
I am fantastic.
Okay. Mariano's not supposed to be here today.
Why?
Because he was supposed to come in tomorrow.
Oh, no, my...
Did you tell him the podcast was tomorrow, but it's actually today, so he wouldn't come?
No, my schedule is switched, so... So I came in
today. Oh, I didn't realize he was
today. I didn't realize
it either.
Oh, yes.
Well, and, thank you for coming.
Episode number two of Not Carl Banks.
Right.
Correct? Okay. No Carl Banks, episode number
still,
two.
We love Carl Banks.
Yeah, so he emailed me. They emailed me. But I was a little bit butthurt, and I didn't reply back. They said, "When can you? Are you available this week?" Meaning, like, as in this week? And they emailed me on Thursday. I'm like, "Yeah, no, didn't respond yet."
Okay,
take I'm over it.
Yeah, take your time.
He's only my favorite player ever.
Right.
I'm a little bit, you know, like when the girl breaks up with you,
yeah,
and then she calls you back like a week later, and you're like,
"I vaguely remember."
Yeah, no. I'm binging out here in New York City, deep down. How you doing, Tony?
I'm doing good. Whose idea is the 10 a.m.?
Oh, we can adjust.
This is really hard.
But you're...
Yes, okay, I know where this... I know where
you're going. Yeah, 6 a.m. Eggs Benedict.
Absolutely, I get up early. I have a morning routine. It is difficult to adjust my morning routine, number one. Number two,
let's
I did make it...
operations meeting right now. Yes.
10:03, I think it was here. Last time I was early and
yes.
You were late.
Yes.
But I was still here before 10.
Yes.
So that was really difficult. And to be social...
Yeah.
At 10 a.m. is really tough
oh.
for me. Now, you guys are cool, yes.
Yeah.
But to actually wrap my head around anything before 10 a.m., not by myself, is really
tough. Tony, I'll do this at 10 o'clock at night.
No, that's past my bedtime.
No, it's again your line. At 11:30, there's a shot, there's a picture
no,
on the calendar.
11 o'clock, 11 o'clock, I'm done.
11, are you?
Usually.
What time do you usually go to bed?
11 o'clock.
Really?
Yeah.
Why do I think that? Why do I
not? What, you thought later?
Well, I didn't think yet.
Those are the good old days.
I didn't think, well, no, not
only because I get up at like 6:30.
Speaking of which, Marino was here last week with him.
Yeah, I missed him. I missed him. Hi, Dave.
Yes. I didn't realize that you're an 11 o'clock hard 11 o'clock.
Ish, yeah, but pretty close. Like
are you still
like
doing your morning routine driving someone?
Yes, yeah, of course.
See.
Yeah, and that's a hard, that's a,
can,
that's a
I'm going to say this on your
schedule.
You know, one of my best friends, his wife, is in a similar situation. And I would tell them both, mm-hmm. on behalf of my buddies, get your license.
Yeah.
It's about time.
I still wouldn't do that, though. The train is 2 minutes away.
You could go to bed at 1:30 and live that life again.
No, I wouldn't.
You could be binge
drinking.
But
I wouldn't.
You know, okay. Honestly, like, I'm
it
with
keeps
you.
Me, it keeps me on track.
What time do you get up?
6:40-ish.
Okay.
I'm shooting for 6:30 is my goal, but
okay.
I haven't.
What time are you driving to the train?
7:35.
Okay. And then you head back.
So that sounds like an hour, but it's not.
Right. No, I just
right. Because it's not.
Yeah. Cool. You got to get up.
You got to get up.
Your morning routine.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you take a shower in the morning or at night?
No, I take a shower after I work out, which is about
even,
9.
I think that's a weird question. I said it.
No, I wanted to know if it was part of
the routine, right? The routine.
The routine.
There's 50 things you can ask him about his routine, not showering.
It was perfectly fine. I'm not offended.
And if he's washing his
he didn't ask me if I took a leak, and that's probably the case that...
We're all over 40.
That's just a foregone conclusion. You're getting up twice at night before you get up in the morning.
I'm figuring by 1:30 a.m. you're at the toilet. Anyway, so what is a good time? Let's work this out.
No, I'm just...
No. No.
10:30 would be better. That half hour actually would make such a difference.
Well, here's my other podcast that I do on Fridays is at 11. I would like to do this at 11, too, sure. And then I could just remember 11.
You have a hard time remembering which is
you
which?
You think it's funny, but, like, having two podcasts, I'm like, which is 10, which is 11?
You should take that Prevagen shit.
The what?
The Prevagen for your brain.
I
If you can't remember two times like that.
No, no. Okay. I can't remember to take the Prevagen because I've taken it once a week.
Yes.
So let's move this to Mariano.
11 is tougher for me.
Right.
But I could do 10:30.
How's that? 10:30
works for me.
10:30 is beautiful.
So you have to.
So Instagram Live, we're going to change this to 10:30, not 10 o'clock. You're welcome.
I'm fascinated by this part.
Because it's only half hour?
Yes.
It makes all the difference. Because I flew to get here at 10:02. But I believe that half hour, yeah. I didn't have breakfast. I had a shake.
I didn't have my omelet. All you new kids have been doing podcasts now for 5 seconds, and it's...
All right, hold on a second. Let me scrap you on that.
But we don't have a hard 10 o'clock start. I do it to really...
Yeah.
More so accommodate you mostly because...
Well, I appreciate that.
I
appreciate it. 10:30 is cool.
We're done.
All right. There you go.
Let's move on. Right. I appreciate...
Episode 34.
In the kit.
The gavel.
Mariano, you want to talk a little bit about... people always ask about this type of stuff. What's your sleep life?
Oh, my sleep life has been... I would like to be where you are, where I'm going to bed at 11 o'clock. Even if I'm not necessarily going to sleep, but I'm in bed and I'm reading or something like mm-hmm. that. And I had that for a while when we first moved into our house when Gemma was born six years ago and almost seven. But, you know, then craziness of kids and school, I think, just kind of screws up.
That's a huge variable.
Yeah.
I'm spoiled.
I mean.
Yeah, but Gina does everything.
Sure. The thing is that we both get up at like 7:30 with the kids and getting them off to school, and they'll both have different start times.
Well, the get up time is not negotiable. That you have
the
to get
up time
kids,
is, right? is what it is. And Gina and I, you know, Gina goes to bed much earlier than I do. She's better about kind of setting that time mm-hmm. period. I think the hardest thing that I have is that I always feel like I should be doing something between 11 and 1 mm-hmm. because everybody's asleep and it's quiet.
Yeah.
And I can
see, but I understand that dynamic.
But he goes for a walk.
I go for a walk.
Don't judge that. Good for you. I heard that.
First off, I am judging that on the fact that he doesn't go to sleep. Forget the walk and just go to sleep an hour earlier.
Yeah.
How long is the walk?
Like usually about a half hour.
Okay. That's a good half hour spent. Though.
And I go towards the end of the night because it's actually my method for bringing myself down.
Yeah,
like I will
exactly.
I'll listen to a podcast, I'll do some thinking on the walk, like all of that stuff happens. Even though I'm being active, it's a way for me to turn my brain off and just kind of, you know, I get ideas from, I listened to the Bellcast mm-hmm. last night when mm-hmm. I was out for my walk.
Okay. That's approved.
And all of my podcasts happen during that time period. So that's important time for me. So even if I don't necessarily get that 11 o'clock, just at least 11:30, you know, somewhere around 11:30 to 12, I'm in bed. And even if I'm reading but not doing anything that is going to keep me up, that's important to me. So
when do you shower?
I shower at night. Because if I try to do it at night.
I know why you shower at night, buddy. That's how it sounded to me when he said, anyway. Did you guys watch the video?
Yeah.
Did you watch the video?
Yeah, I did. I watched both times.
So just from last week.
I have comments. These are my notes.
I wanted to take notes. I'm sorry. I didn't take notes, but I'm going to try.
I swear to God. They're
in my head.
I created a Google Doc.
I heard about this.
You don't reply.
I heard
all
that.
And by the way,
just
so you know, I know you don't reply to it because in it says Tony's topics, voiceovers, audiobooks, and will Tony even read this? And under Mariano's topics, it says, have a piece of meat, please, you vegan life.
You've commented. Okay, so I don't get notified if you...
No, but you got the initial email.
The initial email. I forgot to check back. I'm sorry.
So...
Okay. Well, no, I have all these docs that I'm supposed to keep track of, just for the podcast.
No, you're correct. It's only one doc
for the podcast.
The Google Doc, I didn't feel that my notes for today were appropriate to put in the Google Doc because...
You don't want to let the cat out of the bag and let me see what you're going to talk about.
No.
You want to catch me off guard.
No, I view the Google Doc as more like, here are topics for discussion, as opposed to here are my ideas for things that we...
That's a good way to use it, too. There's a lot of... back end stuff happening.
There's no back end stuff. There's no
back end. Well, back end, yes.
Do you still use Slack?
Yes.
You do. Do you use Slack?
We did for a while, but we found
that. Do you want to start using Slack now?
Well, I don't, but I would have had you both use Slack.
Yeah.
But because you don't do it, we're just going to keep separate lives.
That's fine.
And just pretend we're married, but we're really not because it's true. Okay. So forget it. Okay. So last week we talked about the raising your prices, and I mentioned the video and the logo and $18,000, by the way, of which, before you get to, I downloaded a proposal that they sent out. And the brand development was $350,000. So, yes, your price problem with the logo is, so there was a video out there, and the video was about a gentleman named The Future who owns a company called Blind, and he was mentoring and sitting with a young lady who was kind of, seems like early stages of design world, or at least running an agency. And my problem was that over these shows that it was his example, but it seems to be it's more, a lot of people tend to do it, and the answer is always just raise your price. In which case, the other night, I watched another video of him, and in the middle of it, he just laughed and said, just raise your prices. So, I sent you both the video. Please, take it away.
Well, do you want to go first, or do you want me to go first?
So, my initial comment, and we can go.
Did I recap it correctly, Rob?
Yeah. I actually
link that in the show notes.
Yeah, I actually do. Yeah, you should, the video. And you should.
We don't have show notes.
Oh, I thought we did.
No, we do, we do.
I thought the guy was actually pretty good.
Yeah.
And I'm curious to see some more videos out of the future, I guess it's called.
Yeah.
Is that the company? His name is Christopher, I think.
His Chris like Doe, and he came up, I guess, with a tagline, like, he's the future.
Yeah. So it was cool. I was impressed by some of his knowledge. I did like him. What I didn't like right off the bat is her attitude from the beginning. That annoyed the shit out of me.
I didn't see
because
that.
Because you had some context behind it.
Probably.
So I had no context when it started.
Yeah.
And she came off, like, petulant right from the beginning. She was basically like, I'm angry.
Yeah.
Well, why are you angry? Well, because I only charge $5,000 for the logo, and you charge $18,000.
Yes.
I want $18,000. Well, go get it. Like, right. I want to say F you. Like, so that annoyed
me.
But anyway,
the entitlement part.
I was like, who the fuck are you?
Right. Well, this guy Chris has been doing this for 25 years.
Exactly. Yeah. So good for him. And that just right away, because we're kind of like, we have a kind of a radar for that stuff, because we've all been around for a certain amount of time. We have experience. And then meanwhile, anybody who's, you know, nothing teen is entitled to everything that we have. So that's the first quick first impression. But then that's where we can get to your notes, Mariano. I just want to put that out there because I thought actually she softened up and became more vulnerable, which was great actually. And just to describe the video, the mentor, let's call him, this guy Chris, kind of leads her to where a different form of thinking, I suppose you would say, right?
Yeah.
Which I was actually impressed by. I was impressed by some of his salesmanship, too. It was a little salesy in certain spots, but in such a way that it wasn't threatening, I suppose, depending on the context and what you're selling and who you're selling to and stuff like that. When he starts talking about the car, what you drive here today and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I thought that was interesting. But those are some of my just quick impressions. As far as like takeaways, I don't know where do you guys want to go with this? Like,
well, what do you think about the notion? Did you see the part where he says raise your price?
I saw the whole thing.
Okay, so what? Like, in essence, my problem was
you think that not raising your price is a knee jerk reaction.
I just think it seems like it's a Band-Aid solution to a lot of different things.
Yep.
And I also think it's like. Just it's like
it's easy. I think it's easy, but I think the one thing that you have to, like, when I saw the whole video in context,
I think he's doing her a disservice by saying, well, if you want this, then just raise it, because
that was almost like the end result. Everything he said before that were the important things that she should have taken away.
Mm-hmm.
And the end result is,
I want to raise my prices.
I know, but
and he should have alerted to that.
He kind of said throughout the video, okay, you want to raise your prices, definitely double your prices. But then he said, Do you have any case studies? Mm-hmm. Do you have any this?
Yeah,
you
know,
do you
have like any nothing.
In other
like,
words,
these are the things. And he even said, like, you know, the whole experience. You know, you can say, even though you've only been around for a year and a half, you can work that combined experience sure. work. So, like, he said, I don't have to do that because I've been around for 25 years. Mm-hmm. But someone like you, if you take on a partner and they have 15 years experience, well, together you have 17 years experience. Mm-hmm. That is a way to sell yourself. So the takeaways that I had from him, and I understand why that message is frustrating, because you're right. Some people are going to look at that as the soundbite and not look into the deeper context behind it. One of my takeaways is paying attention to the details and building your stories. Like, he has this swath of knowledge of things that he's worked on, but also things that his experiences, and he brings that all to the table when he's talking to the customer. So as soon as they say $18,000, that's too expensive, he can pull. He has already analyzed that person and said, all right, how can I make them understand that what I do is more than about what the price is, but it's more about the experience that I have and why that experience is going to be important for you in the long run, because you have the fancy car or you like this special kind of jewelry. Like, I think that's where I think you're right. The raise your prices as that one soundbite to her is going to be probably what she clings to.
Well, mostly because she opened up by saying that. But, and I watch him regularly, and I love this show, but that mm-hmm. part stuck out to me. However, I do notice that one sales tactic that he does, because they do a lot of role play with the guys that and the girls that work there, and he's learning from what they do and what they don't do. But one, what he does is he does reverse psychology. He pulls it away from the client, from the bid right away. As soon as they balk, or not as soon as they balk, but somewhere soon, if he sees that it's a price thing, he always says, well, we have somebody else that, you know, another company that might work that better for you that I can refer you to. And right away, the client goes on defense saying, well, wait, I'm, you know. So he uses that tactic a lot, which to me, to be honest with you, kind of basic, but it's amazing that it probably does work.
Well, it's amazing that it works, but it's also, I think for him, it's his reputation, you know, like right. People are not coming to him because they go on his website and he has prices listed and says, you know, okay, for a logo it's this, for logo it's this range. For those that they go to him because he's got that established reputation. He's worked with hundreds of clients that have worked with him through projects, been very successful, probably has a ton of testimonials that he can point to.
Well, here's the raise your price part that comes up, right?
Et cetera.
I have the exact same situation. The mm-hmm. difference is, he had and said it's $18,000, and he was in a place maybe, or whatever the number was, that he could afford to lose it. Now, one thing he did say that was really a light bulb thing for me was, or it was something that I need to think about more often, is that he said when he was doing a roll call with a sales guy, and the guy said he said to him, "You go in there and you're talking to the client," meaning himself, "as if you have them and you don't want to lose them. I go into a sales pitch and mm-hmm. I pretend, and I go in there as if my life is not going to be any different if I lose you right now." Mm-hmm. Because he went through and the guy said, he said, "How much is the price?" And he said, "Whatever, $20,000. And the role-playing client said, "Wow, that's a lot of money." He's mm-hmm. like, "Is there any flexibility or whatever?" Or however, he's like, "No, that's," he's like, "Well, why is the fee that way?" And while you said he can explain all that stuff, he doesn't. He says, that's how much I charge to do something. But if you need something, we have other resources for you that we can guide you to that you can go use. Maybe another company will be a better fit for you.
Right.
So he pulls it away from them.
Yeah.
So he does that tactic, and maybe out in certain worlds that works, but I would imagine with high-end clients, that stuff is remedial for them.
Well, and I think that he's very good. I noticed just in watching a couple podcasts that he was in, he's very good at reading people. Mm-hmm. And he read her very quickly. He sized her up very quickly, you know, even though he's been doing these podcasts for a while. But he was able to demonstrate that he can read clients. He knows what level they're at. He can, and like I said, those stories become very important. The details that he picks up throughout life.
Yeah.
You know, he talked about putting his hands on a mug and feeling like what the tactile piece of the mug is. Yeah. Going outside and sitting and reading a book and just letting being absorbed in the moment and being able to express that when you're talking to people, being able to express it as a story instead of making them feel like you're hard selling them on something. Because you're not selling them on just the logo. You're selling them on the experience of building the logo, what it represents your company, how that logo is going to be perceived by other people. So he doesn't have to. I'm not saying that he does this necessarily in every situation, but he pulls on all of those experiences together into a tapestry based on his interaction, his quick interaction with that person, and is able to say to them, here, you know, he's able to present to them very quickly everything that will answer the questions that they have, so that by the end, they know that $18,000 is going to be well spent with this company because they pay attention to all the details they would be concerned about expressing to someone else.
And you can apply that because we're talking about him and his approach, but you can internalize that and apply that pretty much in any situation. So whether you're selling, it doesn't matter what you're selling.
It's cool to get inside the head of a big brand, though, because we do this stuff all the time.
It is.
But, you know, and people can relate to us, but it's nice to see, like, when Vayner talks about their pricing and when he, like, the bigger, just to see how they...
Right. It's, you know. So it's scale. It's right. scale. So a $2,000 client for
yeah.
you
yeah.
Might be their, I don't know, $30,000 client, right? Whatever the number is. Or, yeah. And same for me and same for you, Marielle. So it's scale. So getting back, I just want to tie back to, like, the whole raise your prices thing. Raising your prices is easy. If you're looking for, you know, a Band-Aid, let's say, right? That doesn't mean you should never raise your prices.
It also saying raise your prices a Band-Aid.
Or actually just
well, doing, actually
or
doing,
just
it.
Doing it, right?
Yeah.
So that doesn't mean you should not raise your prices. And
that is definitely not the point of the topic, right? That is not.
Because ultimately, it's not always about, like, oh, costs are going up and growing and stuff like that. Right. It really is about...
Value,
right? So I'm a big fan of raising your value, right? So someone in her position, I didn't see the follow-up episode yet. There is a follow-up episode.
There's four episodes, actually. And she does more of, if you go to his channel, there's actually more than she does herself.
I saw it start, and I just didn't have the time to watch it, but I definitely want to, I'm curious, and I don't want to know what the result is, but I'm curious.
Sure.
But my point is, like, to just simply, like, let's say I was consulting... I don't know, some DJ's just starting out right now and he's, you know, well, you know, I want to charge $5,000 and they're charging $800.
Yeah. Right.
My instinct would not be, I might tell him, sure, double your prices right now. But I would probably follow the course that Chris followed in the video, mm-hmm. which is, okay, so now back me into that. Like, what are you bringing to the table?
Right.
For your $1,600 versus $800.
Right.
So I say raise your value and make sure that your value mm-hmm. is equitable or can at least justify whatever cost that is. Right. Now, there have been times for all of us, I'm sure, where you're doing something for $1,000 and you're like, wow, I gave them $1,500 worth of work or $2,000 worth of work.
Yeah.
Or you might feel $3,000 worth of work. And that might be the time when you go, okay, it's time for me to...
Increase,
double, whatever that number is that you feel comfortable with, knowing, and this gets to her point a little bit, as far as, like, knowing your market, let's mm-hmm. say, right? And that's going to impact you.
Right.
I know it because I've lived it. So it's going to impact you when you do that. So you have to be ready for the repercussions. However, I will swing it back to his side and say that pricing is a barrier to entry.
Mm-hmm.
And it is effective if you are trying to target your market.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to be prepared, number one, for the repercussions of not being able to attain that market, at least not right away.
Right.
Or in a small scale. And number two, you have to be able to, again, justify your value to that market, because now you're not $1,000, you're two or three or four or whatever that is.
Right.
So the onus is on you as well.
Right.
So are you going to raise your prices?
As a matter of fact, there's one service we are going to be raising our prices on.
Do you want me to hold off on this episode?
It's in the plan for this year. We haven't decided exactly when yet, and we've been telling certain customers. But, you know, the challenge for us in that case you know, we had a little bit of this discussion at the previous podcast. You know, the particular servers that we're thinking of increasing, just the costs have gone up. And we've done everything that we can to make it efficient. And this is kind of like a last-ditch effort. We've had this price that we're currently working with for close to 5 years. And, you know, that's not sustainable to keep that price for as long as we have and not consider a price increase. Right. So really the price...
Mama needs a new pair of jeans.
We have more employees that we need to pay. That's what it comes down to. Grown, so, you know, we've grown. And I think... But I think the value that of what we provide is actually... We probably could double our price and still be less than a lot of the other businesses out there that do similar things. The only reason that we're able to offer it at the price that we have is volume. So we've become very efficient at handling segments of customers and saying, okay, all of these customers have similar needs. We're going to be able to be very efficient in terms of getting their tasks done because we know it's very similar for each of them, and so we can offer this at a pretty low price.
It's efficient.
So it's very efficient, but like I said, the price increase is still going to be lower than what other customers are. And I'm very sensitive also to price increases because as a consumer, I don't like
correct.
That.
Right.
So I'm going to say, like, if you're in this current pricing structure, we're not going to change it for 6 months or a year. So that gives you time to plan for it. Mm-hmm. We're not talking about a huge amount. Like over the course of a year, it's $360. Yeah. So it's not like we're talking about thousands of dollars more.
Or we might.
But we're looking at it from the perspective of let's alert our customers to the fact that this is happening and say in 6 months, that's the cutoff date. That's when everything's going to happen. If you want to lock in your prices now, then you can sign up before this date and we'll honor that price for another six months.
Yeah, out. That's cool.
So it's something that I think every business needs to, even if you're established, you need to always kind of look at and say, you know, I need to pay these people more money. They need raises, bonuses. Costs of services go up, like a reporting service that we used for many years that was sold for $99 a month went up to $500 a month in 1 year. So that was a big hit for us in terms of expenses going up. And so, you know, that's one of the things that comes into consideration when we're thinking about the prices for our services. Mm-hmm. So.
You're on Instagram now. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
Saw some awkward poses awkward. And photos. Photos.
Photos.
So, MD, I know, right? MD Fabs?
Yes.
Is now an active member of the Society of Instagram.
I wouldn't say active, but I am.
I would say from where you were, active.
He's got an account.
And you can catch me Fridays at 11 on the Bellcast, that podcast. Thank you very much. Okay, so we talked about, let's go to the next topic, which falls into this with proposals and estimates. Programs you use? Software?
I use PandaDocs, and I love PandaDocs. It's
as in like?
For proposals.
As in Bamboo Panda? P-A-N-D-A?
P-A-N-D-A, okay. Yes. P-A-N-D-A-D-O-C-S.
D-O-C-S. And free? Not free? Templates?
We happen to use the enterprise version, and they do have templates.
Oh, you made fun of photos.
Yeah, exactly.
Templates.
They have templates. Uh-huh. I don't know what their entry level option
is. So do you have a template? You go in, you create the estimate, you send it to the client via email for them to review.
But basically, we create these template documents.
Yeah.
Template.
But I want to know like the nitty gritty. Do you have already the terms of service in the template?
Yeah.
You just duplicate it and start over?
Yeah. Okay. Well, we have boilerplates, the templates that we use, and then we can just pull up that template. And there's a method for putting tags in so that you can just fill in customer information for
the
template.
What about the actual packages? Do you have it where you can add the packages automatically?
Yep. You can set up a catalog for yourself so that you can pull in the different things that the customer's ordered, and then you can put it out there.
And then you have to start over because no customer or client is the same project, right?
No, but there's certain things that we do add in the template, so there's content that's going to be consistent no matter what the customer does. And there are some that we start from scratch. Like if it's a custom web development
project, then we're able to do that completely custom service. Like, we can create a one-off document if we wanted to. But then what happens is when we complete the document, we have this set up for signature, and it goes to the customer by email. They sign digitally.
Okay.
Then the way we have it set up, it comes back to us, and then we sign digitally. And
how do they reply if they have an issue? Well, two things with this. One, are you able to have it so that the client can select different choices within the estimate?
We don't have that set up, but they can.
They can.
Yes.
And if they want to edit or send you a message back, do they have to reply back to email, or is it able to be done in that document?
I'm pretty sure – it's been a while since I've looked at the client side thing, but I'm pretty sure it's either way. They can reply to the email.
Okay.
And then it will go back to the document, and it'll be posted in kind of like a historical interaction area.
Okay.
Or I think what they can do is if they click the link, they can go to a comment section and then add a comment to the document. So you can go back and edit the document.
Do you charge based more hourly or project?
We charge project, but we create the estimate with a sense of how many hours we're going to spend on it.
Okay, and just approximately, usually, are you asking for a 30, 20, 40, 50 deposit type thing? Is it staged down into different milestones?
We will ask for a deposit. We'll usually do milestone-based payments.
Okay.
For big web development projects.
Ask for on a deposit? I'll tell you my answers, because I just want to, people want to know, like, there's
somewhere between 30% and 50%.
Okay, all right.
I think that's pretty much industry standard.
Okay.
And the amount varies based on how big the project is. So if it's going to be a project that lasts 6 months, we only ask for 30 up front, because usually that's going to be enough to cover our initial costs.
Okay.
If it's going to be like a 2 month project, then we ask for 50% up front, because we know we're going to finish 1 month.
Short term.
That'll cover our first month of expenses, and then the second month, we can charge at the end when the project goes live or whatever.
Tony, you don't have to speak about the other company if you don't want to give any of the sensitive information.
So no. I'll contribute.
But also just on the
Dropout side too.
Well, because that's smaller incremental. So
yeah.
How do you handle both of them or whatever?
Very differently. Yeah. So obviously, smaller scale, obviously. Not like big, giant web development projects like Mariano. But so on the SCE side, we do so let me back up and answer your original question as far as like the actual documents and stuff like
that. Yeah, like the nitty-gritty.
We're not we do a pre-formatted pricing menu, essentially, because we're a little more boutique. So we're extremely personal. I'm meeting with everyone personally, one-on-one. All of us are. All of my colleagues are. Or possibly on the phone, FaceTime, whatever the case. So they get a personalized pricing menu. It is pre-formatted, obviously. So everyone gets the same pricing, with the exception of the host. The host might be different from one to the other. So it's not so much there aren't big variables in the proposal other than what the client chooses to incorporate into their individual package, which we are extremely loose about. So they don't have to make those decisions when the contract gets signed.
Most importantly, they have to book the date with you.
Correct. And sometimes, right. And depending on, I always like to say that it's kind of personality based. Sometimes, a couple or clients will be much more like, I need that solid bottom line. So they'll put whatever they're considering doing, and maybe there's a variable down the road, but it's pretty solid.
Mm-hmm.
Others are just like, I just want to book the date, because we want you for the date, and then we'll figure everything out. Especially when they're in, like, we're not celebrating for another year and a half, almost 2 years sometimes.
Yeah.
So they're like, oh, we'll figure it out.
And it's a small deposit up front, right?
So the deposit is, yes, it is a small deposit. It's 20% of our...
agreed upon.
Our initial services, right?
Yes, with the potential to add on stuff.
Right, okay. But even with the add-ons, we don't charge additional deposit for that. We just personally don't.
Right.
So it's pretty straightforward. We make it easy for the couples to, kind of move forward and confirm everything with us.
Okay.
So it's a little bit more personal for us, obviously, because it's the service that we're offering. It's
pretty personal service, and we come at it from a very personalized perspective. So that's how we do that. So there isn't some sort of, like, you know, system proposal that goes out. There is a contract that goes out, obviously.
Yeah.
That's a little bit formal, more on the formal side.
What do you guys use for that?
We use, so it's actually built into our office software, which is one of the larger programs that is used inside the event industry, which is called Event Planner. That's who we use. There are a couple out there. It's one of the more robust ones. So that actually allows you to create and send a contract, and it keeps everything inside the software, basically. So it's pretty straightforward.
Cool. And on the Drophouse side?
So the Drophouse side is even more personalized, really, because it is primarily just me dealing with the client directly. What I usually do in terms of, well, in terms of invoicing, I do have templates that I use depending, you know, whether it's...
Are you doing estimates, or are you...
If it's an initial inquiry and they're like, oh, I'm considering doing this, right, that, I'll give them a ballpark, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, I'm thinking about the amount of time, ballpark, that it'll take me to create
something.
But what
are you doing it in? Are you doing a keynote or...?
I use numbers. I keep it really easy. So Apple's numbers, because I've got... Templates already created for pretty
temples.
Much temples.
Okay,
templates.
So, all three of us.
I told you 10 a.m. was a bad idea. So I use the templates that I've created. I customize them. So that's after the initial inquiry. So my initial inquiry will really often just be via email. My clients reach out sometimes via Instagram, you know, and I try to keep them on email just because it's trackable. Once I get more particular with the specs of the project, then I will give them a hard cost.
Okay.
And usually that'll go out on an invoice, and I'll take my payment at that
point. But you can turn over some stuff pretty quickly.
Yeah, very quickly.
So do you bother with the deposit? Do you ask for upfront?
It depends. So if it's a very small job, like something that literally I'm going to turn around very quickly, and I've never worked with them before, I usually ask for 50%, quote unquote. That's what's on the template, the invoice. Right. 50% if it's a anything over, like, I don't know, $150, like some super small.
Yeah.
If it is small, I do ask for payment up front. And with basically, I give them the notion that, hey, I just want to make sure that I can schedule this into my project log. It's good faith, quite honestly. Yeah. I've got the reputation, but I don't know them.
Right.
If it's a larger project, then I usually will ask for 50% up front. Not that I have costs necessarily to cover other than time, but it's more, again, a good faith gesture, especially if I've never worked with them. If I have worked with them before, often than not, I'll not even bother with that. Hey, dude, I can schedule this next week or in a couple of weeks, depending on the scope of the project. It'll be done in X amount of time. But so it's very hands-on, obviously.
Your time is a cost.
So. My time is a cost, and I always try to, like, this is something...
Wait, are we getting an invoice
right now? No, not for you. And that's interesting because that you said that, because one of the phrases that I caught from that video that we were initially started talking about... actually, it wasn't that video. It was the other video.
The second video, yeah.
Yeah, or the first, depending on which one you watch, where he's on the whiteboard about, and this should be interesting for you guys listening if you're in the creative field or what have you, how to spec out your...
Well, what did you think about that?
I'll tell you what. The numbers are irrelevant, right?
Yeah.
Because they may or may not be relevant to any of us,
of course,
right?
You can change them.
What it did, like, it was a little bit of a light bulb for me. Uh-huh. When it's so he's talking about, like, some sort of, like, recording or something like that, which was very relevant or something like that, because he started out with artist.
Right.
And I was like, okay. And then he goes to producer.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, shit.
I'm a producer, too.
Okay. Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah. So he starts breaking down the project. So
I know where this is going.
It was at the right time of day. It was the middle of the afternoon. I took a break. I watched this video. And I step back, and I'm like, shit, you know what? I'm charging... You know, for, yes. Okay, it's going to take me an hour. It's going to take me 2 hours.
But you're
it's going
to take
people. Me 6 hours. But I'm voicing.
Right.
I am producing.
Right.
And then I'm also managing the client.
Right.
Meaning, and that's what sparked the idea with the Mariano, your comment about your time being money.
Right.
So not only have I emailed back and forth to set up the project, but I've also invoiced you and whatever that entails.
Well, I think that's the cost of business.
I'm getting to psychology. Getting to the psychology that he used for myself, right?
Yeah.
And I do take into account
just automatically, shit, man, here's another email, here's another 10 minutes of my day.
Right.
Here's another email, here's another 10 minutes of my day. So you have...
Is it when I email you saying this?
Maybe.
Shit. Digging my own grave here. Yeah. No, true. But yeah. So, especially when you are a smaller operation like myself and Lorenzo, we're kind of like solopreneurs, I guess you could say, solo ops. You know, it everything you do takes time, mm-hmm. and some of it is quote unquote costs of business. But then, when you get into the actual, like in my case, the production side, I am doing multiple right. roles,
and
I hadn't really thought about that. I'd only thought about, oh, it's an hour of my time, or 6 hours of my time,
exactly. And regardless of the fact that it's cost of business, mm-hmm. there's that still needs to be built in. However, you build it, into it your does, proposal, yeah. it still needs to be built into your proposal because yeah. you're still paying that money
yeah.
out.
Yeah.
So, and that actually came into play for us when we started hiring more and more people, because when we were speccing out projects, we were speccing out a section for design, we were speccing out a section for development, mm-hmm. Q&A, and stuff like that. But we started adding project management into that because then there has to be an established relationship with the customer, and right. somebody emailing has to be on a regular basis yeah. and talking to them about the project and being yep. that liaison. And that's a hard cost for you. Like yeah. that's somebody that you're paying to go out there and manage that relationship.
Right.
So like I think the difficulty is that when you're a solopreneur, you're only thinking about your time, and you don't compartmentalize each of those tasks that you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not until for me, it didn't happen until we started hiring people and we needed to support
those people.
Because
that's when it becomes concrete.
Because then we're like, okay, this is an expense for us. This right. is something that this is someone we need to pay.
Because now it's not just me doing all this. Now, exactly. like, yeah, that's somebody and that's overhead for you.
So it was that was a good video for me to see
yeah.
because it kind of justified my evolution as a company
mm-hmm.
to having to consider all that. And we don't even consider everything yeah. that he talked about.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like
we don't consider the expense of the computers.
Well, you're welcome.
Yeah. So thank you.
Yeah. But yes, you should literally have the paper, like the triangle hats.
Yes.
And literally, when you're working on a job, you get 12
change
minutes.
Change my hat?
Put your hat on.
You know what? That's not a bad idea.
If you do it.
Yes. It's going on Instagram stories.
If you do it, please do share it with me.
Yes,
at least.
I will. Yes. what about you, Lorenzo?
I wanted to follow up on that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's the part that I grasped too, because I think that I just feel that, like, you get me as a person.
That's
and
right.
all that comes in with it.
Yeah, and
I can tell
it's
you
difficult.
That there, especially when I was doing a lot of the DJ stuff, like the DJ companies, like, I was doing your marketing, your copywriting, your design, your
right.
web development. Like, I was doing 6 jobs.
Right.
Where if you called, quote-unquote, an agency, mm-hmm. it would be 100-fold. And then on top of it, as you both know, or Tony knows especially, they would just call and I would just talk to them for 40 minutes.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's right.
And then it was text messages. And then it was this. And I'm thinking to myself, like, does the dudes at Blind that you work with or does Sam give the clients their – no. I almost end up being your whole marketing department and I would just charge it based on – it's just me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 1 hour of time.
Mm-hmm.
So now when I redid my website like a year ago, I broke it up into different services because I'm like – no, if you want me to write your copy, mm-hmm. you, in theory, are calling a copywriter.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
If you want me to take a look at what you're doing and give you, that's part of I would do that.
Excuse me.
But it's amazing.
But
like,
even that's copy editing.
Yeah, I mean, like, especially with the DJ industries at the trade shows, I would write marketing material for them and it would just be like, it was just, for me, it was just like an afterthought. Like, mm-hmm. of course I would do it. And I'm like, I'm getting paid as a designer, not as your copywriter and marketing. So, you know, that... I had that moment about a year ago, and it got further cemented when I looked at it, that this video we're talking about. I mean, at first I looked at the numbers, and I'm like, "This," but then I got past that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes. What do I use? I use a program called Dubsado, which has everything in there. And so I have a deck that I use for larger clients, which is about 25 slides that I send for, in essence, anything that's over $10,000, okay,
mm-hmm.
and roughly that number.
Mm-hmm.
Anything below that, I have Dubsado, which I have the templated contracts. They can sign off on it. They can pick what they want. They make payments. They do everything in there. The one thing that it hasn't done yet, and by the way, if you ever look up Dubsado, D-U-B-S-A-D-O.com, use the promo code Rangers. Thank you. You'll get free money.
You should have said that way slower. Nobody got that.
I'm going to say it again. I just realized that. Yes. I said Dubsado really quick because we're like, D-U-B-S-A-D-O.com. They come from the wedding photography world, in truth. So it's great for... They have so many contracts clients can sign. But if you use that, use the promo code Rangers. Thank you. As in the New York Rangers, the greatest franchise ever. That said, wow, I lost my train of thought.
Mm-hmm.
Dubsado, Rangers.
You're talking about...
project management.
Project management.
So they have a pipeline of projects that I put in there. But I use Trello because I can't keep up with the different stages. And I have them in boards. What I'm challenged with is I'm trying to, and similar to Tony, it's hard for me. I'm trying to slim it down to as much as I can so that I can almost open up one program.
Mm-hmm.
And Tony calls me, I go right to that.
Right.
Instead, like I go to Trello, and it's good, but it's not perfect, but I have to go to Dubsado. So I looked again at Basecamp, but Basecamp doesn't do the invoicing. Really, Dubsado has everything except the UI of how to go from your project to the notes of that project.
Mm-hmm.
It's three clicks and it's annoying, to be honest with you. And to have to open it up and all that stuff, it saves time overall.
Mm-hmm.
It's so I go to Trello, but then I'm challenged by it a little bit because as one person, especially dealing with higher end clients now, more so. There's a lot of note-taking that is required, different than what it used to be.
Yeah.
But part of the reason is because what it used to be, when I would do a website development, right, I'd give a fee, and I'd be basically like, okay, I don't need to take notes because I'm basically doing all your work, doing your copy, doing your this, so I don't need to talk to you about it. I'm going to do it, and then you're going to edit it.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's different because if they don't want copy or if they don't want this or don't want that, I have to rely on the notes that I get from them to implement it into the website or to the brand or to whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like I went from a solopreneur to, I'm going to try and come up with a word, a corporatepreneur.
Yeah.
Like, you know, where like
you should have staff.
Yeah. Like, you know, like I'm dealing with clients now who literally are, their revenue is $400-500 million.
Yeah.
It's like, and for one person, I'm learning to shift with it. So Dubsado has been like a savior for the past 2 years, but it's just like one tick away from being
everything you need.
Yeah, and yeah. So
I'm curious.
What do you use for the project management board?
We do Basecamp.
Basecamp.
Yeah.
So everything is filtered within Basecamp, and if it's not in Basecamp, the pricing stuff goes to Panda.
Yes.
So could you say that you're using just for a project those two for the most part?
Those two are primarily, and then FreshBooks for invoicing.
Right. Okay. So you have the three.
Maybe the three
programs. So, yeah. Okay, so for a project, it might be... I know there's programs you're developing stuff in, but I'm saying in the management part, you're using those three.
We're using those three. And then to add one more, we use Help Scout for customer support. So,
okay. And that's a service that's specific. I'm just saying like the core basics.
For running projects, we're using Basecamp.
That's because you have a team, so it helps.
Yeah. So, I mean, Basecamp helps because, like you said, we have a team. They're across the United States. So anybody can go into a Basecamp project at any time and see where the project is. So if I'm getting ready, for example, to have a call with a customer that's not happy, I can go to their project and say, okay, what have we done? What are we doing? You know, so that I'm prepared in the call.
Daddy's home. Let me see what's going on.
Let me see what's going on.
Whereas Tony, for SCE, because not the Dropbox, but SCE, are you guys using Slack?
We use Slack to communicate and exchange. Yeah.
Okay. So like for a wedding event that's 2 years from now, you have a core page or a core website that you can go to see anything that's updated. Is that the event planner one?
That's Event Planner.
Okay.
Event Planner is company-wide, and it is used for every type of event that we're executing. Slack is a little bit more communication, I guess.
Within the guys?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, within the office team, and we've got different channels set up so that it kind of keeps it honed in so that if you don't want to get... You know, every proposal, you don't want to get notified because they're not my proposals, whatever, because we have a channel for that. So we have a channel for individual, like, specific needs with different groups.
Right.
So it works pretty well for us. We just started using it maybe only 6-7 months ago.
We actually did use Slack for a while, and I like the product.
It's cool.
The only issue that we ran into is that it started to become less focused.
It's like an glorified email.
It can be a little scattered.
The reason we started using the chat feature inside Basecamp mm-hmm. is because it can be really targeted. So you can set up every project that you have with the chat. So if mm-hmm. somebody has a specific question about a project, they can go to that project and uh-huh. type in the question in the chat related to that project.
It'll archive all the chat exchanges, etc.
They're all searchable.
Yeah.
And then, but we have an area called the water cooler. So if somebody mm-hmm. wanted to share a cool song or something mm-hmm. like that, they can go to the water cooler and share that. We have a company wide one where we put announcements into. We don't even have a chat in that one. We just put announcements into mm-hmm. into that. So Basecamp served all our needs. So and we weren't really using Slack with anybody external, and that's why we decided to just stop using it. It wasn't as effective for us as I think it is for some other people.
Yeah. I like the part about Basecamp where, if I'm not mistaken, because I'm using it with Dominic for clients that we work on together, mm-hmm. is you could have sections or tab, whatever it was, but those certain things you could deselect whether the client could see it or not. Because you can invite the client
mm-hmm.
to get the feedback, but there are certain parts where you can deselect it so the client can't see it.
Exactly. Right. It's a privacy.
Don't F that part up.
Yeah, right.
Yes. Lovely. Okay. So Basecamp, FreshBooks, and PandaDocs.
PandaDocs. Yep.
Slack.
Slack, Event Planner.
Mm-hmm.
Dubsado, and Trello.
Nice.
See? Nobody can find the perfect solution.
There probably isn't one.
No. On that note, episode 34 to the can.
Yay!
We'll see you next week. And Fridays, Lorenzo, thebellcast.com. The website's up, live.
Woo.
Follow us on Instagram. See ya. Bye.